Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Aramaic Friday and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor. I'm Michelle Pache, and I'm here today with Dr. Tim Hayes and Gail Hoffman. We warmly welcome you to the show, and thank you for choosing to be with us. Today is October 3rd, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk with Dr. Hayes. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. Now, let's welcome Tim and Dale in the process of learning and experiencing forgiveness.
Well, thank you, Michelle, and unless I miss my guess, Dr. Michael Rice is also with us.
Well, that's welcome surprise.
I am.
Hello. Welcome, welcome. Dale, are you on?
Yes, you are. I'm here. I am also.
Oh, cool. We got the whole family.
Yes.
How cool is that? The
beautiful.
Magic
the
of
whole,
technology.
Yes, the whole I am. This is actually my first time using my new ever-so-spectacular high-tech internet protocol phone. I've never used it for a radio thing before. I just got it about a week ago. So
sounds pretty clear.
It's clearer than our other one was. A lot of times, our other one, I wasn't sure if it was ours or not until I started using this thing. It was scratching a lot, and this thing's crystal clear, so I'm happy. So as long as the power stays on and the internet stays up, we're good.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I wanted to, I'm here in Franklin, New Illinois with some of my family members, and so we're kind of doing a day off play day. And Dr. Tim is going to do the show with you, Dale. But I did want to tap in and just share an experience that that I had on Saturday in the Mindshifters and Soul Point Breathing Workshop that we did in Woodstock. And it was pretty awesome energy. The group was just moving really monumentally. And I was talking about the idea of the fact that we live, for the sake of an analogy, in a 500 billion piece jigsaw puzzle, and that down through all of the ages, humanity has put together a sum total, a story based on a sum total of 5,000 pieces of that puzzle, and most people are sticking to their story and aren't willing to open and go beyond their story. I forget who it was that said it, that, you know, we had to get our bloated nothingness out of the way. And that if we're stuck in our story, if we're stuck in our minds, if we're stuck in our intellects, then we can't be taught. And so as I was sharing that, I just had this energetic opening, energetic experience, which I wanted to put out with you, to you. And because in part it ties into what we've been talking about over the weeks with the idea of masculine and feminine in the Aramaic, and that it doesn't have to do with, you know, what kind of genitals one has, but that the masculine is that which is manifest, and the feminine is that which is moving in the energetic level, not manifest, or not in in what we call physical expression. And all of a sudden, the opening that came and the boost of energy that came was tied as well into the idea that comes from the physicists that say that every molecule in the universe is in continuous communication with every other molecule in the universe. And I think from this experience that the physicists are, what they're describing, what they're talking about is Rukka, Rukka Dukkha. And so what my experience was recognizing that, you know, when they talk about the Creator is omnipresent, the Creator is embodied throughout the whole creation, and that's that which has come into expression aspect, which being masculine has been called the Father. And that with every molecule, every atom in the universe communicating continuously, that's the energy coming from that back to us that will teach us if we choose to let her. That would be the feminine, the Holy Spirit, Rukka. And that in Aramaic, the definition of Rukka being see who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. And when we're willing and we're open to being taught by that 500 billion piece jigsaw puzzle, for the sake of analogy, then we're open to and in communication with the whole of the Father through the expression that we would call Rukka, Rukka Dukkha. And that if we are actual offspring of that communication, if we let that become our guide in life, then we are the offspring of the Creator or sons and daughters of God. You know, if you go to the Aramaic, instead of saying the only begotten Son, it says the first begotten Son. And then tying that back into Yeshua, this is all kind of juxtaposed in my head at one time in this experience. Then came the thought where Yeshua is talking about, the average person that he's dealing with, in that case the pharisaical mind, and he's saying, you know, your Father, the source of your thought, your reality, is the past. It is the lie. Your Father's a liar. You're not in touch with what's actually true at the present moment because you're living out of the past in your mind rather than in touch with what is alive in this 500 billion piece jigsaw puzzle and wants to come into you, guide you, gift you, do everything for you. And that when we listen to that, you know, he says, I have a different Father. My Father is love. My Father is the whole of creation manifest as the Father. And that when we are guided, led, directed, and live in that, again, the Beatitudes, live in our home in the eternal forces from God, then we are the sons and daughters of God. So you've got the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and Rukka. So I just thought I'd throw that out and see what that resonated for you. See how that fits with what you've been working with from the Aramaic.
Oh, it's such good stuff. You know what? It really reminds me of the first time I read the Kabbalist Enlightenment, was digging through the glossary back in, I don't know when it was, 19 whatever. And I got to that, the Rukka description, and it talks about the Paraklita, you know, that which undoes the effects in our errors of thinking and being, and how, especially when it gets into when you speak of like the atomic forces and the nucleus of an atom. And, you know, one thing that I would love to sort of, you know, I'm not sure how long you can stay on, Michael, but one more thing I think I'd like to sort of pop into that that's even more opening and to me even more beautiful is that energy is considered to be considered to be masculine or manifest. It's, although we don't see it necessarily, it's a thing. And Rukka is like what we sense are the effects, or what we sense are, or should I say, the manifestation aspect of the process. But like the real, or should I say, the source of Rukka, the source of what's happening on the nuclear level, or the breath, or the wind, or the magnetism, or the electricity, all of those are considered Rukka because we don't know where that comes from. We don't, you know, it comes from that very feminine, non-manifest, yet we perceive her, you know, masculine, like almost like the echoes or the manifestation of her through the physical that we call energy, like nuclear forces or what we call breath or wind, things like that. But the beautiful aspect of it is that we don't know where she comes from. You know, we can talk another dimension of reality, and that's nice. But, you know, again, another dimension of reality would be still on some level manifest. And that's the beauty of it, is that either you surrender to her, and that's not throw down your guns necessarily. Some people have an issue with surrender. Either you open to her and, you know, through your own breathing, through your own spaciousness, open to her and allow her to bring you back, to recalibrate you to truth with a capital T, or you can fight against her and she will break you down, whether that be breath, wind, electromagnetism, solar flares, whatever, blah, blah. There's all those different manifestations of it, and it really brings us back to that realization that, you know, she, which is what she was called 2,000 years ago, she is the all-embracing breath of God, the One, and yet that's just a moniker that we call, because it's not really even breath. You know, we think of breath as what we feel on our arm, but that's a Latin term, which is spiritus, which is masculine, which is physical, yet in Aramaic, it wasn't what we felt on our arm that was breath. That is actually just hot air. In Aramaic, that word rucha, what we think of as breath, was actually that feminine perception of its movement. And that and that's why Still Point is so incredibly, just did it this weekend with 17 people myself that came from as far away as like 2 hours north of Toronto in Canada. And I mean, I tell them, you know, there's all these things that I say in my events and my programs, but until you actually do this, until you get into the breath work, it's all just fingers pointing at the moon. And every single person in that room afterward, so many were coming up to me going, I get it now. You know, I thought I understood it on some level, but now I get it. You know, I'm in that. Yeah. I understand it. So
awesome. Well, you trigger another thought, and that is that if we live from the content of carbon-based memory, the mind of the past, if that's our father, that's what sources, our thinking, our reality structures and such, then on a physics level, we're stuck in entropy. Things are winding down. The past just takes what energy it has and it dissipates that energy through its expression and is winding down. But if we live in relationship with that energy coming from every molecule of the universe, if we live in Rilke, then we live in ectopy, and we're constantly being lifted up and supplied with a whole new flow and process of energy, as opposed to counting on what's already in the structure, which is now winding down, dissipating, or what we call aging, that we can live in Rukha, have our home in those eternal forces, and actually have that continuous upliftment on every level.
Oh, it's so rich. It's just so... you know, and I'm constantly telling people everywhere I go that go to whyagain.org, go to Michael's website, get a hold of Why Is This Happening to Me Again. Literally, you know, this is, if we could just understand that it's not about putting something into the system, it's not about believing in, you know, what we call an effect, something outside, and realizing that it's about being not even recalibrated the truth, but being truth itself, so that you see through those reflections, you see through the manifestations, and that doesn't mean that they're bad or something like that necessarily, but you realize that they're an expansion of those deepest aspects of our being. Everything changes, and you realize that rather than projecting your own hidden past onto that person in front of you, or at least onto your mind's image of that person in front of you, to be open in that, it's like, wow, you know, and that's where real responsibility comes from, and it's the core of everything. It's literally the core of everything, and it's the one thing that, it's in so many ways, the sort of modern Christianity just doesn't get about Yeshua's teachings, and that's one of those reasons why I'm so devoted and dedicated to this. Wow, beautiful.
Where we're sitting right now, we are in Frankenmuth, Illinois, which is kind of Christmas City, and they have the largest Christmas store in the world. So we walk in, and this thing's like, I don't know, 3 or 4 city blocks. And, you know, I look at all these bangles and baubles and bright, shiny things and images of people with their hands folded on their hands and knees and, you know, $500 statues that, you know, they're beautiful and all, but Yeshua, if he were integrated, would roll over in it, because all of this is a fraud compared to what did he ask us to do? To live as human beings, to live as the active presence of love. And, you know, you look at the way the suicide rate changes at Christmas and it skyrockets. because most people, instead of celebrating Christmas as the birth of actual love in them, in their family systems, in their relationships, they come together to celebrate some outer symbol instead of doing the work or having a clue of what the work was Yeshua brought to bring, brought to give to us, so that we truly live as the active presence of love. And so these people come to celebrate a false idea and never having resolved or taken care of any of their internal drama and trauma, so many people literally, sadly, commit suicide and have no idea that the only reason they would consider such an act is because of an energy, a frequency held in their minds from the past. And, you know, the past is dead. Let the dead bury the dead, Yeshua says. And yet when we're stuck in this karma-based memory system with its memories and its dramas, and have no idea what he came to do was say, hey, guys, there's a law. It's called Rachma. You got to live in this space of connectedness, and you've got to process out. You've got to forgive from your heart everything you've been putting on your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your kids, whatever. And yet that's all been buried in this baubles and, you know, bright, shiny things. And, you know, I have no idea what a store like this does in a day, probably millions. And the dollars turn over, and it ostensibly is about Christmas, but doesn't do much to bring forward the truth of what the whole idea was. And that was the process of living as the active presence of love and healing the generational patterns. It's like there's been the truth of the work that's involved that really takes commitment and energy to do. The truth of it's been displaced with this easy theology of, well, just say some magic words and get down on your knees and fold your hands and, you know, tell the cosmic supplier what the cosmic supplier should be bringing to you today. And then you'll be living in prayer, which, you know, is the exact opposite of the Aramaic meaning of being the space of love, being a trap, a space where love shows up in the world, which is actual prayer, and where we will get new insight, new information, new input, because in that space of receptivity, we are literally in touch with, and the whole creation will energetically communicate with us and teach us, and everything we need to know will be made available. But if we're so locked into that story in our minds, the drama and trauma game, the hostility, the fear, the unwillingness, and the not knowing that all of that can be forgiven, then we're blocked out of that still small voice. And so it's time for us to wake up. Let's go through the real thing.
I've got a quote, a couple
awesome
quotes.
Just one more thought. It would be awesome if in a place like this, you know, where there, I mean, literally thousands and thousands and thousands of square feet with every shiny thing and light and little critter and animal and ornament that you can spend money on that you can imagine. It'd be awesome if they had a corner dedicated to forgiveness corner, you know, come and learn what it was really all about.
Beautiful. I was just going to say, there's a couple of quotes that I often put out for people when I'm talking about still point. One's from St. Teresa of Avila. The other one's from Paramahansa Yogananda. And they're pretty short. I just love to read the two of them to sort of cap this in a way. The first from St. Teresa, she says, "The soul feels such a sweet and wonderful delight that almost everything falls away. It falls into a kind of swoon. The breathing and all bodily functions gradually subside." A lot of noise. "All exterior strength is lost, and the soul strength increases so that it can more thoroughly enjoy the bliss. Union and rapture or elevation or what they call flight of the spirit or transport, these are all different names of the same thing, which is also called ecstasy." And then one from Paramahansa Yogananda about breath work that he used to do. He said, "When the profound ecstasy of God falls over you, the body becomes absolutely still. the breath ceases to flow and the thoughts are quiet, banished everyone by the magic command of the soul. Then you drink of God's bliss and experience an intoxication of joy that not 1,000 drafts of wine could give you. When you can feel your presence in all creation and also know the joy that is beyond creation, then you are a God-like being. You are in every blade of grass and on the mountaintop, and you can feel every cell of your body and every atom of space. And that's why it's so important to me to always offer, especially if I'm doing a weekend event, still point breathing, because it goes beyond all of the concepts of the thought and memory and anything we can understand on that level. And if you just do the breath and you stick with it and you keep that breath connected, that lets go, the carbon-based memory, the CBM, it lets go. And that 1 microsecond in that space communicates more than all of the whatever 24 CDs that I've put out so far. Some of the programs are like 2 and 3 CDs or 4, and it more communicates in a microsecond than all of it added together. So, yeah. Everybody still there? Am I still on? It's quiet.
You're there. We're here.
I thought maybe we were in the still point for a second.
Yep. Loud and clear, and... By the way, for people who do want to get to your material and open that space with the understanding that being taught the tools brings, how do they get to you, Dale?
Well, DaleAllenHoffman.com is my website. And I will say that we have a 4-CD set coming out on Tuesday called Primal Voice Transformational Toning that goes into the open... That what I speak of when I say primal voice, it's not a voice that's actually spoken. It can be expressed through the spoken voice, but it's actually, the way I explain it in the program, is it's in the space between the words. It's the space between the notes within music, and I speak really intimately and do quite a bit of breath work exercises in it and take people through a lot of really intensive toning that I don't do in all of my gatherings, some like really deeper level toning. And what I'm letting people know is that the it's not really about the toning itself. It's about the space after the toning. It's more in the echo than it is in the toning process. And then the last disc is a bonus disc that is a toning circle, an Aramaic toning circle I did live in Florida about a year ago that was so profound that even our recording equipment was affected. Brand new batteries, you know, several $1,000s worth of recording equipment. But you can actually, when the energy was getting most profound and intense, you can actually hear it manifest itself through the recording, which I left in there because I thought it was just the coolest thing. It's not the only time it's ever happened, but it's just a really profound 4-disc set that I've been working on for a while that really is kind of like a cornerstone of the future of what's going to be coming through me in the next couple of years. Moving more into the space and allowing people to, or at least beckoning people toward not so much the concepts of the mind, but the open spaces of the heart and the awareness of the breath, and going into a much more experiential sort of paradigm of my work in the world. And it's all right there. People don't need some sort of 500-page book. It's just a matter of learning a few key understandings. And, of course, right there in the beginning of the CD, it goes right into removing the layers as opposed to adding things in that we think we need to do. And that's the forgiveness, is removing the bushel baskets. So it's just a really profound. It comes out on Tuesday, but people can pre-order it between now and then, either MP3 or CD. And anyway.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, I'm going to leave the show to you guys, and I'm going to go join my family, and we hold everybody in a blessing. Appreciate you, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody next week or week after next in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I am in Michigan, not Illinois, by the way, at Bronner's, and then we'll be in Lansing the following week, and Codependence to Interdependence 9-day intensive just outside of Lansing, starting the 31st of October. So we'll talk to you guys later. We hold you in a blessing, and thank you. Dale, appreciate you. Dr. Taylor,
beautiful.
Much appreciated.
Bye.
Same to you, Michelle.
Thank you. Love you.
All right. Well, the call-in number is 646 1-800-400-4169. And we would love to hear your comments and questions. We've got a hand up in the 517 area code. You're on the air.
Hello, Dale. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
It's Rex in Lansing, Michigan.
Hello. Good to hear your voice.
It's wonderful to hear your voice as well. And Tim, of course, you know that. And I had a question regarding the Paramahansa Yogananda quote. Do you have how I can access that specifically? I just loved it. I had not heard description of the breathing process from him before. And I may have read it without realizing what I was reading back then, but...
Absolutely not. That's a complete secret. That wasn't supposed to get out to the public. Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm going to pull Bob Newhart on you now.
Are you on Facebook? Have you ever heard of Facebook before? I think we're friends on there, aren't we? You probably have heard of it.
I believe we are. I don't do a lot with it, but I do some.
Yeah, I don't. I spend almost no time on there anymore. And the reason I know that is because I actually get messages from time to time with very pointed, and I say this with a big smile on my face, pointed sort of subtle attack messages from people asking me why I don't reply to things quick enough and why I don't post as much anymore. You know, what's funny is when I was one day had my, I'll post it on Facebook where I can email it to you as well. I'm trying to think of a way, I think Facebook would be the easiest to just throw it up there where everybody could get to it.
Sure.
But
whatever,
like, yeah, I was
for you.
It's been a few times in the last few years that I realized that I was sort of had like a mild addiction to the Facebook thing. And the most interesting thing about it was that a few months back, I'm sitting next to my daughter, and she's wanting, my little girl, Shamaya, she's wanting me to roll the ball with her. And I kept picking up my phone with my left hand and looking at it, and then I'd roll the ball with her. And she stopped the ball about 5 feet away, walks up to me and takes my face in her hands and takes my phone and puts it on a chair about 10 feet away from us and walks back and then puts my face in her hands again. And she kissed my nose and she sat back down and rolled the ball to me, 3 years old. And I went, okay, I think I get the point. Because I realized that, well, Facebook, I thought that was real relationship, but the truth of the matter was that it wasn't real relationship. It was like, as an example, people put stuff on my YouTube videos, and I could spend 2 hours doing a proper reply to one single message and then have them fire something back in 5 seconds that's, you know, again, not very thorough. And then I would have to – and I realized that my own life was sort of being swept away by that. But what I'll do is I can email it to you. I can post it on Facebook. If anybody else has an idea of where I could yeah, you're a friend of mine so on there. So,
yeah, if you want to do that, yeah, that's fine. I'd love to have it, you know. And Dale, great statement from Shamaya to you and for you to share with all of us. And that's something, you know, this I've heard this quote so many times, is that if a person makes their transition, they will never look back and say, I wish I had worked more, or I wish I had distracted myself more on Facebook, or I wish I had spent more time doing emails. It'll always be that it would have been ideal to spend as much time as possible with my family, you know, and to with the loved ones
yeah.
that I share life with. And it's a great example that you're expressing, because I also find that those can be very absorbing. And it's one of the reasons that I do goal management, Dale, is because that it helps me keep focused on where my energies are most important to apply for the fulfillment of those chosen goals for that day. And I think in our scriptures, it's very clearly with that. And Michael's teaching, I love his teachings on it, and that's why I use it. But it helps. And what I found is that, like you, it's impersonal. Although people quite often will live their lives through it, through emails and texting and the whole process, whereas we miss the most essential component of being in relationship and communicating back and forth. So I am totally in support of what you're sharing, and that's one of the reasons I spend very little time on Facebook, and I look at my emails because it's important, a part of my business world and my friendships, but I spend very little time just lounging on it, and I find it to be very important.
I'm sorry, were you talking to me? I was checking my Facebook messages real quick. I didn't realize you were talking. I swear, I'm kidding. No, and that's the thing is, and yeah, I'm not, it's not that it's some sort of somehow bad, but yet you realize that it's just like any other, it can be just like not only the illusion of relationship, but it can be just like any other drug that if you've got to reach for it, you have to reach for it, you have to check your messages, then something needs to be observed. We need to be able to look. And look at that and realize what we're doing, especially when life itself falls by the wayside. And, I find a lot of humor in it, the way I sort of people came at me like, you know, what are you doing? You're not replying to your stuff. You're not clicking like to my posts. You're not – I send you messages and you don't reply enough. And I understand that maybe on some business level it doesn't look as good, but you know what? My life is so full and it's so rich with my family and just – doing what I do, whether it be reading, a passage from Yeshua or doing a translation or just being open in space or toning or meditation, my life is so rich that it's funny that I feel so in this world but not of it. And I know some can feel triggered to feel frustrated by that because I'm not as interested as a lot of people are in playing catch up or playing, not catch up as in, you know, tomatoes, but catching up to whatever, you know, keeping up with the Millers or whatever it may be. It's interesting though, but yet there is that, my drive isn't fame, it's not riches. My drive is just to be in the open expression. If it's five people or 1,000 people, 1,000 people is beautiful, but five people is beautiful. And, yeah. Yeah, it's just I'm very fortunate to have – I'm so much more awake now that Shemaya is 3 as opposed to Mikey and Lucinda. I was fortunate when Mikey and Lucinda were young to be laid off from a job that I had been at for 8 years on December 7th, 2001, right after September 11th. And, of course, 70 years to 70-year anniversary of Palm Harbor, of all things. But I was able to be at home with them. But even now, I'm so much more conscious. And, I wouldn't trade that for any amount of some pseudo mask on the Internet.
It's really essential that we are discipled in where we put our energies and our focus. And I think there's so many distractions with technology, just like what you said. They have become addictions in many of our lives, and they're avoidance behaviors. And when I'm out in the world, I watch people in cars and I watch people walking down the road, and they're having an experience of walking by, my own perception of it is they're having an experience of walking by this gorgeous flowering tree, and all they're doing is pushing the buttons on their phone and just I'm watching this, and they don't even look like they know where their feet are going. You know, and so I think it's just valuable. It's neither good nor bad. It's just that if we're using anything to use as an example of denial or a dissociated state from something we're feeling or thinking, then it's something that we have an opportunity to forgive inside us because we're using it in a way that's not constructive and healthy, ideally.
And it feels so much safer, like via electronic media, because there's not the accountability, there's not the responsibility. You can go back and change what you said. Your emotions aren't quite as connected in, and you don't have to feel the results of what's being triggered in your own consciousness quite as much because you can hide behind that persona. And, yeah, it's kind of like to me that fascination I have when I go to an amazing music concert and somebody is filming the entire thing on an iPhone. I'm like, do you realize what's happening here? This is a present moment experience that is so incredibly profound. And you're squashing it down to 2 inches high and 3.5 inches wide, and you'll probably never even watch it again. You'll probably post it on some social media, and somebody will spend, you know, 2 or 3 people will watch a minute of it and then turn it off. And here you are, you've missed the experience. And it's an interesting crossroads we're at right now between what's real, and which is funny too, because that's a question, and it's one of the tracks on my newest CD program. The track title is "Are We Real?" Are we real? Interesting question. Anyway, yeah. So you actually called in for something.
Well, no, that was it. Go ahead, Kim. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, Dale, you've often talked about, I believe it's the word fear that was translated by the Greeks as fear, but it's a different word in Aramaic that means something about fully alive, fully present, fully aware in the moment. What's that word?
Well, that word would be tedkal or kol.
Yeah.
What's interesting is the ted, like Ted, kind of Ted in the beginning of the word. What that can mean is to cut or to break something apart. But the kol sound at the end, though, is means whole. It means all, whole or full. Kol means full or all. But what that the tid sound in the beginning there, those, it's actually two different prefixes, a tet and a dalet, two different letters, the T and a D. And it's usually translated, I should say, as breaking something apart. Now, if you have tidkol, what that translates, most people would translate, or a lot of, I should say, you know, with through the Bible teachings, people usually translate that as a fear that takes you over, you know, a fear that sort of, you know, a full body fear. But yet that's not really what that word meant in the ancient teachings. What that word meant, the example I give in so many of my CDs and things, is that you can picture a woman, a mother who whatever is raking leaves in her front yard, and the young child runs out into the road to grab a ball, and a car is doing 50 miles an hour in a 35-mile-an-hour street, cancel the thought, and the mother sees that child running right in front of that fast-moving car, and she runs, she darts, and in what appears like no time whatsoever, outside of the rules of time and space, she's there, and she's pulling that child back away from the car so that she's not, so that, you know, she's preserving her life. She's not going to be hurt. And the question I always ask people is, when does she feel the fear? Is it when she's running forward? No, it's actually after that the fear sets in and her body starts shaking. Now, that fear, that's the resonance of something that's already in her being. Now, the feeling that she felt that had her bending the reality of time and space to move 30 feet in a span of seconds that you simply can't move 30 feet, where she's firing on all cylinders, not necessarily what we would call fight or flight, but fight or flight can be a manifestation of that. When the body is firing on all cylinders, you're wide open, kind of like you're walking in an alleyway at 2 a.m. and all of a sudden you hear a crack behind you. At first, what you feel is not fear. At first, what you fear is tedkol, which is the temple, the life temple. It's the pinnacle of the temple. It was an idiom in the mystic legs of Aramaic. The pinnacle of the temple doesn't mean climbing up onto a thing and looking out on the earth. We need to grow up on that. It means that the life temple, the haichla, is resonating, firing at a state of what would be considered a max capacity in terms of what you can be present with in this moment. And as Michael would say, when it's firing at that kind of capacity and a lot of things are moving, a lot of things are triggering and resonating up, if we don't allow those, if we don't know how to throw those off, then we reach that point of entropy where the system starts to be torn down by what's resonating. However, just that the wide open firing on all cylinders, that's the way we are supposed to, that they instructed us to be in the presence of what we call God, not to fear God. What an awful thought. That's just the resonance of past experience, but rather to be firing on all cylinders so that you're wide open, wide awake in that experience, and you don't have all those boundaries and bushel baskets on top of that light in the experience. It's to be whole, to be one with that presence. We so completely mangled that and made it all about fear, fearing God, an outside power that can break you down, that can burn you in hell, and all these just, I find myself saying lately, just childish concepts. We just need to grow. We got to grow up. It's time to grow up. Let it grow up. Take a few steps back. Let the Jesus teachings grow up. Let us see what Yeshua was actually pointing toward. But we can't do that if we're not open.
And my point was, that's the state where, when we're in that state, that TED call, that we get more direct experience of the connection to Ruka or God, and everything that would dumb us down from that or take us away from that is something that's worth removing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And Tim, thank you for asking that or mentioning that, because in hearing it again, I know I've written this down. And this time when I wrote it down, it had so much more. I had a comprehension of it that I didn't have even close to before. I love that about this work. It's so exciting, you know, to have you explain it, because I can remember you saying this maybe even twice before, maybe even three times, but as you're going through the story again, you know, with the lady and what I wrote this time is so much clearer in my comprehension of what that actually means, because now I feel more competent to be able to explain it in the prison system when one of the Muslim students will mention that, you know, that said very clearly to fear God. And I had done my best to express this, but now I have a much different comprehension of it. And it's a matter of just removing the material in me and hearing it enough times so that I can actually, removing the material in me that's inhibiting my hearing. And once I forgive those realities, then I can actually see what's going on and hear
what's being shared. Yeah, hit it right on the head.
Exciting.
Yeah.
So thank you, both of you, for, you know, engaging that again. I've got your "Why is it time to let the Jesus story grow up?" as you watch Dale's new video. I hadn't set it as a goal yet today because I had so many other things that were happening, but I've got it up in my screen right now as I'm speaking with you, Dale, so I want to listen to that as well.
Oh, yeah, that was on YouTube. I think that one was filmed at Celebrating Life Ministries, their spring retreat or conference, like spring of last year. It was such a beautiful, amazing. I actually have a video that's going to be coming out in a few weeks about what happened to me that weekend, because I had so many transcendental, paranormal, deeply spiritual, unable to fit into the mind experiences that weekend. And that was like one of the initial sparks, was that particular video there. It's like an hour long. It's very in-depth as well. So, cool.
Well, I don't know that I've seen it. I don't think it was on all of your YouTube when I was going through all of them back 6 months ago, was it? Or you
no, no, that was actually just put up within the past maybe 2 months or so. So.
Yeah. You just sent it out in an email I got here today. Anyway, I was mentioning that. That was the purpose of that. So thank
Beautiful.
You again for all that you're doing, and I always enjoy speaking with you and learning from you and sharing. So, and I, again, totally agree and support the idea of being in relationship, and I often have had that same feeling and the same experience of working with people, especially on potentially charged issues electronically. And I've even, quite often, I will intervene in that communication and I will say, I no longer wish to communicate about this topic electronically. I would love to either see you in person or have a conversation with you on the phone so that it could be interactive. And we can really, you know, get this handled in a way that's going to be loving. And I think that that's something I found to be very effective as well. So thanks for bringing that up, though, about Shamaya.
Oh, absolutely. She's, if we just pay attention, you know, she's, yeah, all of them, all of the young ones, if we just, not just them, everybody, if we just pay attention, stay open, and realize, yeah, that we're not really having that, always having a direct experience with that beautiful being in front of us. Usually we're having a regurgitated experience from our hidden past that's laying itself over the present moment. That's why Yeshua said, sufficient unto this moment are the evils, which means the moments of a lack of presence in the moment are the evils thereof, you know, being off the mark. So thanks for calling in. It was beautiful.
Awesome. Thank
thanks,
you.
Rick.
I'll go back on mute. I'm going to continue to listen. See if there's anyone
right.
else there. Blessings.
Thank you. The number is 646-200-4169. If you have a question, we'd appreciate it if you'd press 1. And as Michael often says, if you're nervous, if you think maybe my voice will squeak or I'll misspeak, just take a breath and release all of that and put your hand up and ask a question. For Dale on Aramaic Fridays.
My voice squeaks sometimes, so that can't be an excuse.
So, Dale, what's Akil Karsa?
Akil Karsa is what we would, it's what's generally translated as the tempter, the accuser, or the resister. If the way I explain it is, it's the tomcat on the shoulder. When I say tomcat, I mean like Tom and Jerry, the great cartoon, because Tom would be there in front. I think I mentioned on the show within the past couple of weeks, Tom would be in front of Jerry, and he would have like a big fork or something in his hand. And, of course, the little tomcat on the shoulder had the pitchfork. It's that, and it's like, come on, poke him, poke him, poke the little mouse. It's that. It's what it is. It's the echoes or the resonance of those past experiences that we have that are sort of tempting. It's the victim, the accuser, the perpetrator thing too as well. I don't remember exactly what that was called, the triangle. But it's those aspects where we flip between being a victim or being the perpetrator, as in an instigator of being provocative with another person, whatever it may be. And it's that, what it really is it's those divided parts of the human, what Michael would say, the carbon-based memory, lashing out in the present moment, whether that be based in fear or hostility. And it was called the tempter, the accuser, or the resister. And, you know, I inject a little humor here because, to be completely honest, the reason this was so funny was because I have actually had the experience before, and I wondered, where does that experience come from? And I've actually done worksheets about this. I went to see my wife and I went to see Bobcat Goldthwait from the Police Academy movies like 3 weeks ago, and we were fortunate enough to go two nights in a row, and we got to hang out with him and have great conversation and stuff. But he talked about in the stand up. He just out of the blue, after talking about a completely different subject, he said, you know, like when you're on an elevator and you're standing behind an older woman and you just have this like urge to like flicker on the back of her head, and everybody starts laughing their heads off. And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, wow. And I'm like, the reason we can laugh is because not necessarily that I stand in elevators wanting to flick people in the back of the head, but every single solitary one of us in a human body, occasionally something pops up that we wonder, where does this come from? Where in the world, where are the echoes of eternity that is bringing these kinds of things up? And to me, I see that as that, like, you know, Michael always says that the sins of the father being passed on the 3 and 4 generations, which is also why I have such deep reverence for the Lakota philosophy and so much of the Plains tribes or nations philosophies of the 7 generations, realizing that not only physically what we do in this world, but energetically, spiritually, on the level of presence or lack thereof, all of our missed targets, we pass that down on the 7 generations, which of course pass it on to 7 and 7 and 7, and until those bushel baskets are removed, they're going to remain there. Now, like I say, I'm not necessarily saying that everybody like wants to stand in the back of a woman on an elevator and flick her in the ear or the back of her head. But I laugh about it because if we could not be so intense about recognizing those places within ourselves that do echo up, that do resonate up, and we have no clue where they come from, if we could just come in with an open heart and come within a space, then we can remove those and not be so intense about obsessing about where did this come from. And I think, again, that brings us back to the still point breathing. Still point has always been so profound for me, and I love the fact that y'all were breathing the same day that I was breathing people here in North Carolina in 2 sessions. Maybe they connected in with each other. I'm sure they did on some level. But still point allows us to not have to obsess about where it came from or even in a lot of cases what it is. You stay focused on that breath and you slide back or you surrender back into that open space. And your tempo gets recalibrated, and you don't need to have to figure anything out. You just feel it. You sense it. And you can't put your finger on exactly what that feeling is. You can say it feels like peace. It feels like expansion. It's everything on the left side of the board at the beginning of why is this happening to me again? You know, inner sense, all of those different feelings. And was it the left or the right? But that's it. I mean, just breathing, not even necessarily just still point, but just being aware of our breath can change everything. It was there in the original Jesus teachings in the Aramaic. It was removed, not as much by the Greek, but going into Jerome's Latin Vulgate, spirit became some sort of outside manifestation that was a physical thing that we couldn't find, we can't get our fingertips on, because it's not a physical thing, because what we're looking for is what is looking. And I really feel that still point gets me in tune with that realization from St. Francis of Assisi that oneness is not a state of different things coming together. It's literally the realization that we are the one.
Yeah, that's a statement that clearly goes beyond words. And just to echo what you're saying about the breath work, every time I've been involved in a still point session over the past, probably 8-9 years, every time people feel shifts and they have no words for them.
Yes. And that's what I'm pointing at with everything. And it's the same with Michael. He's like, you can watch me scribble on a board. You can understand the words that I'm saying. You can pick up A Course in Miracles, and you can have a conscious cognitive understanding on some level, mental understanding of all of these words on the page. But if you don't put it into practice and you don't realize that it's not about words on a page, that it's about being within that essence of being itself, putting it into practice, then you're literally nothing more than a mask-wearing hypocrite out in the public square, yakking, regurgitating, no matter whether it's a good or a bad translation of Yeshua's teachings, regurgitating those and using those as weapons, either against another person or even against ourselves. People come to me with so much guilt and shame piled up because of the things that they've done against the Lord. You know, and God can never forgive me for this. I'm like, God doesn't forgive, because God doesn't hold. There's an amazing realization that you come into when you realize that it's us that does that. We're the ones that put the hook there. We're the ones that put the big, shining, gleaming, red, flashing button that everybody loves to push. There's no outside presence that somehow brings that and says, okay, here's the button, I'm going to install it, and then I'm going to judge you for it and make you burn in hell because I put this button on you. That doesn't even make sense.
Well, and what you're saying is, I was almost going to say exactly the same thing about the double-edged sword. If we talk about these things, we study them intellectually, but we don't put them into practice in our lives, it becomes something that is a detriment. So there, I forget where it comes from, but there's a statement that says, every ideal that does not become a reality in your life slays a power in you. I think that's from one of Michael's old talks. And in the textbook from Course in Miracles, it talks about how denial, the true purpose use of denial is to deny that there ever could be any error, and that error is real, and that this is only useful in the service of the atonement. And the atonement uses denial in such a way that it realizes the absence of error, and so it is the only defense which does not carry the double edge of the sword.
The
atonement process, stepping into that realization of all you're talking about, is the only thing that cannot hurt us. Everything else, if we just talk about it and don't apply it, it becomes, as you just said, either a weapon against myself or a weapon against somebody else. I love how when you showed up here in Woodstock and you were talking, you made a joking reference to how many people will read A Course in Miracles and then study it so they can go fight somebody about how their interpretation is right and the other person's is wrong.
Or the Bible or whatever it may be. Yeah, the Quran. Yeah. Eesh. Wow.
And the only single-edged, purposeful, safe use of it is to study it and apply it in my life and watch the results.
I've got a photo that I have next to my computer that I think it was originally from atheistrepublic.com, which is funny. I say all the time, I look at atheist material because it helps me find my biases and my blind spots sometimes. But this is, it's a picture of Jesus, and it says, it's like this. I created man and woman with original sin. Then I destroyed most of them for sinning. And then I impregnated a woman with myself as her child so that I could be born.
And then later I'm going to kill myself as a sacrifice to myself to save all of you from the sin that I gave you in the first place. Understand? It's the craziness of it. And that insanity of that religious aspect of those teachings is the same insanity that we do in our own head when we don't want to feel what we're already feeling, especially if we haven't been taught the process or even given the realization that we can actually heal that we're not a victim to it. And that's what drives me forward. It's about having that, the knowing that whether it hits for people or not, that at least I'm expressing that to let people know that you have responsibility here. Every single one of you is a heretic. The word heresies in ancient Greek meant choice. In Koine Greek, it meant the ones who make a choice. We all have a level of choice in the moment. We can either allow ourselves to be unconscious victims of something that's already in our system, or we can allow ourselves to be the open presence of light to burn away those veils. But then when we do that, we have to be willing to feel it and take responsibility for it. And that's a level of choice that so many people on this earth don't even know that they have, because it was removed from so many religious philosophies. Wow.
Amen.
Amen. Can I get an amen?
You just did. And the other word I was going to ask you about, we've only got about 4 minutes left, but the other word I was going to ask you about was enemy, and how you talk about it as the person who, in your presence, when you're in their presence, you cut yourself off from your own breath. And as you were talking, and we were just talking about the atonement, I was thinking about how that might actually include myself at times.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not even necessarily laboiled bubaikun, that syllable, which is so bizarre sounding. I don't even, 21 years in, I still don't pronounce it correctly. And I've never really cared that much about perfect pronunciation. I'm not here for the language. I'm here for the insights of what they were revealing. But that boiled syllable means to constrict or to cut something off, literally as if you were to like take your hands and to cancel the thought, choke someone, including yourself. And that, you know, a good example could be suicide from a point of overwhelm where someone just can't hack it anymore. That would be a physical example of laboiled, which is you're literally snuffing your own life, cancel the thought. But those moments when, you know, that's the thing. It's so easy for us to talk about others that we stop breathing in the presence of. But what if you stand and you look in the mirror and you see yourself and you go, oh, awful. You know, the Joan Rivers effect, that she always made jokes about, you know, her face was plastic because then she didn't have to admit that it was her. And, you know, the even more so when it doesn't involve a physical mirror, but you're just sitting there alone in a room and you realize that thoughts are coming up and you don't feel so good about yourself. And in a lot of cases, you don't know where the thoughts or the feelings even came from. Just all of a sudden you're feeling them, and that's what resonance is. And if we could just come into that realization that the ones who trigger us into those states where we feel constricted and cut off from our breath, those are the potential to be our greatest healers, because they have helped us get access to something that before now we didn't have access to. Well, we had it, we just didn't realize it until that moment when it popped up. There's choice there.
And the choice, of course, is to return to the breath.
Or to not breathe and not even realize that it's up, or that you're having an echo of a past experience, as opposed to, you know, it's not a present moment thing so much as it's just the past shading itself, the veil on top of the candle of the present moment. Wow, wow. It's so clear. It's just so clear. That's what the Course in Miracles was saying. That's what JM is saying with Way of Mastery.
Way of Mastery.
You know?
So, yeah, it's stunning. We only have 1 minute left, but it's stunning to me, the more I read both of them, how Way of Mastery and Course in Miracles are saying the same basic things. Well, thank you for being here. It's DaleAllenHoffman.com. We look forward to talking to you again next Friday. And in the meantime, have the best week, month, year yet of your eternal life. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.forgiveness.com.
whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.